This is the Soulful PR Podcast with Janet Murray, episode 27.
Welcome to the Soulful PR Podcast. Tune in every week for practical tips, strategies, and case studies that will help you get media coverage for your business. And now, here's your host, Janet Murray.
Hello, and welcome to the show. As a writer and editor, and also as an entrepreneur, there's something that I've been doing every day pretty much for the last 15 years, which has been pretty uncomfortable, but it's also been really good for me too, and that is failing. I reckon I've probably failed through pitches that I've sent to editors they're not interested in, or pieces of writing that have been sent back to me to make some changes on, or even business ideas that haven't worked out. I've pretty much been failing every day in my business and my life for the last 15 years. Now, although that's been uncomfortable at times, and it still is uncomfortable at times, I probably still fail pretty much at something every day of the week. It's also been a great opportunity for me to grow. And particularly with my writing, I can hand on heart say that if I hadn't failed, if I hadn't had some early cringeworthy experiences where my writing had been sent back to me and an editor had asked me to change it or to add something, or in some cases completely rewrite it, I wouldn't be the confident writer that I am today. And I really think I owe that not just to those early failures, but also learning how to pick myself up, dust myself off, as the saying goes, and start all over again. So failure has been really good for me, but it hasn't been easy. And my guest on the show, Jonathan Tilley, today, he's also experienced lots of failures and also believes that failure can be a great motivator to us and can actually be really good for us. So much so that he's written a book about the topic. So I think you're going to really enjoy hearing what Jonathan has to say on the topic. But before we get to that, something I just wanted to mention quickly. I'm running a PR mastermind in London in the next few months. I haven't quite fixed the date yet, but it's going to be sometime in March or April. And basically, this is going to be an opportunity for people to come along with a PR challenge that they've got. So it could be stepping up, getting coverage in the nationals if you've only been featured in the regionals so far. It could be getting your PR strategy up and running completely. It could be targeting some really high profile publications that you've tried before but haven't had any luck with. And what I really want to do is to get a group of really kind of passionate individuals together who are really interested in ramping up their PR to come along to this mastermind. You'll get probably around 20 minutes to present your problem, and then you'll get feedback from me and also a special guest who will be a national journalist that I'll bring along for the session. Now, if that sounds like the kind of thing that could be of interest to you, then I'm going to put a link in the show notes to where you can sign up to find out more. By the time this goes live, I may well have a date, but I'm not 100% sure. So if you go to the show notes at janetmurray.co.uk/episode27, you'll be able to get details of that there. You'll also be able to get the first three chapters of Jonathan, my guest today, his new book, The F Word, which stands for failure, by the way. You'll be able to pick up the first three chapters, which I think is a really, really generous offer. So if you want to take advantage of that, it's janetmurray.co.uk/episode27. So now on with the main part of the show. So joining me on the show today, I have Jonathan Tilley. Now, Jonathan is many things. He is a brand strategist, but he's also a former actor, and he also does an awful lot of work with creative business owners, helping them to really just create the best businesses they possibly can. And I'm just going to hand straight over to Jonathan and get him to introduce himself.
Hi there. Thank you so much for having me on. Yes, my name is Jonathan Tilley. I'm a personal brand strategist, and I help creative people transition into successful creative freelancers with my online courses and my books and coaching.
So the focus of our episode today, even though you've done so much, and I'll get you to say more about that in a moment, we're going to be talking about failure, and we're going to be talking about hopefully some practical strategies for dealing with failure. Because if you're somebody that's kind of in the PR arena or trying to get PR, then failure is something that you come up against a lot. So I wondered if you could tell us a little bit about your background and also maybe a little bit about some of your notable failures.
Of course. So like you said before, I used to be an actor. I used to be a musical theater performer in productions of Mamma Mia, Cats, 42nd Street, A Chorus Line, Dance of the Vampires. And those are five huge, big blockbuster Broadway musicals, you know, and it sounds great. But I didn't tell you about the 5,000 auditions that I completely bombed and failed at. And nobody really talks about that, but they all talk about their successes. And rightfully so. When you hang out with friends and with a friend that you haven't seen for a long time, what's the first thing that you do? You swap success stories. So how was last year? Oh, this happened and that happened. So-and-so got married and da-da-da-da. And then it sort of lulls and then it goes into, well, if you don't mind me asking, how's your mom doing after the accident? You know, so we as human beings, as animals, we prefer to speak about our successes and make sure that everything's fine, but rarely do we have the opportunity to speak openly about our failures and actually deal with how to fail, especially as a creative person and an entrepreneur.
And you've also had some business failures as well. It feels really weird, actually, to start an interview like this talking about your failures. But I guess that's the topic of our conversation.
Exactly.
But you launched a podcast, didn't you, which was quite a big fail.
Which was a huge failure. And I don't even tell the people the name of the podcast because they're like, oh, what was the name of it? It's like, you didn't subscribe. You don't know what it is because no one subscribed. And it was this great idea that I had of doing a podcast, but I was thinking, you know, let's just go really everything in the opposite direction. Let's, because podcasts are free. Hey, Jonathan, why don't we make all of my podcasts that you have to pay for them?
So, right
off the bat, that's just like a huge warning sign. And me being the, you know, excited, motivated person that I am, I got all my friends in on it. And I said, you know, let's have you write the blogs. Let's have you design the logo. Let's have you do the web design. I got so many people in on it and I invested about $30,000 and it flopped. I didn't get one single subscriber or listener because I was being a complete jerk with my content. I wasn't giving anything out for free. I was being very measly and really greedy with my business plan, where I wasn't, the whole goal in the back of my mind was to make millions, but really I just lost money and didn't have one single follower because it was all about money instead of, you know, making an impact on people's lives and giving people stuff for free that they can actually use and then getting to, and that being the medium for them to get to know me, like podcasts or blogging or videos. So yeah, huge mistake, but it was the best learning experience I've ever had with an online business. And since then, I've gone on to launch multiple six-figure online businesses by not doing what I did with my podcast.
Wow. And you said, I think I heard you said you wasted or lost about, was it $30,000 or something?
$30,000, yeah.
Wow. And how did you recover from that? How did you bounce back?
And that's the question, isn't it? Like you talk about failure and then people say, oh, it was a street fight. And then, but now everything's fine. We always sort of seem to skip over that middle part, which is the messy part. So when I was doing my podcast and the whole idea was great, the brainstorming idea was great and getting friends in on it was great. And then I just started to get this gut-wrenching feeling that something wasn't right, but I would ignore it. And I'd say, no, it's fine. You know, that's the typical feeling that you have when you're doing something new or when you have a startup or when you're creating something new. And then it just wouldn't go away and the money wasn't coming in. And there were all these signs that just were like, you know, this isn't working. You're failing and you're pretending that everything's fine, but it really isn't. So I finally had to just sit down with myself and say, listen, you are driving this into the ground. This is a train wreck, not about to happen. You have already wrecked the train. Like you need to tell everybody to get off the burning train, save yourselves, and you need to save yourself and just walk away. And I mourned it. And it was this feeling of, I'm going to describe it physically, this feeling of this like scratching feeling from the inside of my chin all the way down to my belly button, like this horrible scratching, mourning, burning feeling. So I was like, okay, that is my body telling me that this is what failure feels like. So heal yourself and then try and whenever you start to get that feeling again, that's a good compass, a good sign for yourself to say, hey, Jonathan, you're not on track. You need to adjust. You need to figure out what you're doing wrong so you can get rid of this feeling, so you can get the good feeling of helping people, of having a creative business that's successful. So how do you get yourself out of it? Well, I told everybody to stop. And I said, we need to just stop and I need to figure out what's going on. And I did some soul searching and I just started to build myself back up again. I had a great support network that was able to help me. A friend of mine, who's my biggest cheerleader, she said, that totally bombed. Congratulations. Now, what can you learn from this? What can you learn from this? What can you learn from this? What can you? And she kept asking, what can you learn from this? And in the beginning, you know, I was like, well, you know, don't do that. Well, okay, what can you learn? What more can you learn from this? Oh, well, don't invest $30,000 of your own money into something that's going to bomb. She said, okay, but what can you learn from this? And it got all the way deep down to the core question of what can I learn from this? And what I learned from it was, don't go into a business to make money. Go into a business that you are passionate about, that you are curious about, that you actually could spend 24/7 learning more about, because that's where the energy is going to come from. And when the energy comes, then the money comes, you know. So that was a huge lesson that I learned. And the support network that I was saying before is mandatory. That's what really helped me get out of that slump of that horrible podcast. And to have the core 1 to 5 people that we all have that we can call on whenever we need them to just give us a standing ovation when we succeed, but also to give us a helping hand when we fail.
And since then, it sounds like your business has gone from strength to strength. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Oh, yeah, sure thing. So in 2007, I stopped performing as a musical theater performer because I turned 30 years old. I started to get gray hair. I was sort of like the older guy in the ensemble and not the younger guy in the ensemble that could jump and bounce around. And I was just tired. And in 2002, I started to do voiceover. And I didn't really think that much of it. And I just thought it was kind of silly. And then between 2002 and 2007, it took off. And so I was doing voiceover during the day and then performing at night in musicals. And I just thought, you know, I'm making more money doing voiceover, standing behind a mic, speaking into the dark in less the time than performing 4 hours a night, 8 times, 4 shows on the weekend, 2 on Saturday, 2 on Sunday. I have no private life. So I had to decide, okay, let's hang up the dancing shoes and get behind the mic more and do more voiceover. And that's become, so I still have a thriving voiceover business, but like I said before, the timing is really up and down. You could have 5 voiceover jobs in one day or 5 in a month. It's really touch and go. So to fill those gaps, I would just play with other businesses. So now I have the JonathanTilley.com business, which is all about how to help creative people transition into successful creative freelancers and entrepreneurs, with my League of List Builders online course, which is all about how to share your talent with the world without being spammy and jerky and weird with your emails. How to really research your clients and say, you know, I really think you're awesome and this is the talent that I have so far. I'd love to come and into a nice working relationship with you. If not now, then sometime along the line. That's one of my online courses. Another online course that I have is called The Sacred Space Sessions, which is all about drawing like a kid again, getting back into your creativity. And that was actually one of the, I discovered the creative, the Sacred Space Sessions, my online course, a 28-day art journaling course on how to feel good on the inside and out when I was going through that horrible failure podcast experience. I needed something to create and build myself up again to make me feel that I was surrounded by a good group of people and that I had a support network, because I felt really alone and isolated when I failed. And I think we all feel like that when we fail too. We feel isolated and alone and like nobody knows what's going on with us, but really everybody knows what it feels like to fail.
Yeah, gosh. And I mean, you've done so much and such a variety of stuff as well, which is kind of really interesting. And hopefully we can get to that in a second. But
yeah,
one thing I wanted to ask you about failure was, mm-hmm. So the listeners of this show, they will be very interested in failure. That sounds awful, doesn't it? But if you're kind of in that PR space, as many of my listeners are, and they're trying to get coverage in newspapers and magazines, on TV and radio, but also maybe on sort of key guest blogs, failure is, it's really just kind of par for the course. It's just something that you just have to take in your stride. And I guess what I was wondering really was, you know, how do you see failure? Well, how do you define failure?
Because I'm a performer, I'm an ex-performer, I'm very physical. So I describe it as a physical feeling. And like I said before, that scraping feeling from my chin all the way down to my stomach, that's what failure feels like to me. So I use those feelings whenever I feel that sensation. I'm like, okay, I'm failing. How can I adjust and get more to success? And also to ask yourself, what does success feel like? If you're feeling great, then it's like, okay, guys, stop. Like, just press pause. I'm feeling good. This is what success feels like. I want more of this, right? And especially when you're doing PR, especially when you're putting yourself out there, I mean, that is so vulnerable for you. But on the outside, it looks like courage and bravery from everybody else, you know? So And it's not a thing of like, I hope this goes through because then I won't have to fail. It's like, guys, you're going to fail. Let's just deal with it, right? Your article won't be published in the Wall Street Journal. The blog won't be uploaded onto Huffington Post. Deal with it. But what can you learn from it, right? Maybe it's just not the right time. Maybe it just didn't fit that specific segment. Maybe the editor was having a really crappy day. Like you just don't know. So I just finished reading the book Big Magic by Elizabeth Gilbert, the writer who wrote Eat, Pray, Love. Fantastic book. And she said, you know, it was her job. So she sort of had a split, I'm taking it to the next extreme. I see her when she's writing this. She said, you know, when she was training to be a writer, she would take care of herself as Elizabeth, the person, but she would also take care of herself, Elizabeth, the writer. And she said, I would never want to put Elizabeth, the writer, the creative one, under any pressure or any debt or make her feel bad because Elizabeth, the writer, just loves to write. So Elizabeth, the person, is going to take care of all the other stuff around Elizabeth, the writer, and make sure that Elizabeth, the writer, has the time to write. And when she's done writing for the day, Elizabeth, the person, is going to come in and pay the bills and go do her bartending job or whatever. And so what she did when she would submit a short story is that she would submit short stories and say, hey, short story, go out into the world. I'm sending it to this one specific person. And if they send it back, which they probably will, on that same day, I'm going to take out the manuscript that they sent back and put it into a new fresh envelope and put a new editor's name onto it and send it out again. So she never left the manuscripts just waiting in her apartment to be taken up. She was constantly putting the stuff out there. And sometimes editors would say, great piece, just not our style or whatever. Okay, great. That'd be a great piece of information to find somebody where it might be a good piece of a good style for that editor. So it's the thing of like, I think we're so afraid to fail, but guys, we're going to fail.
Mm. And it sounds almost like you're suggesting that she had sort of two different personas. So you can have your kind of writer's persona.
Yeah.
But then you have almost like your marketing, your business side of you that goes out and does that and kind of sees it as a kind of business transaction and isn't sort of personally insulted. And I mean, something that has occurred to me quite a lot is that, I mean, I've been failing, you know, failing at this job for 15 years. You know, I've
excellent.
Just been, you know, I started out as a freelance writer. I went into journalism and thought, well, actually, I think I can probably earn more money by being freelance, which is totally kind of counterintuitive. But anyway, and it did turn out to be true. But basically, I've been selling stories into the media for 15 years. And so for me, failure is just part of it. It's just like every day. And the more you do it, that you learn. I mean, it's crushing when it happens, in this, particularly the first few times. It's horrible and you can take it personally. And I've certainly got some stories to tell. But I certainly feel like I've got kind of really kind of tough to it now. And it's not often that a failure like that will really, really kind of wound me or disappoint me, because I've kind of really kind of toughened up to it. And I find myself wondering, well, there's two things really. I find myself wondering whether some of us are just naturally kind of more resilient. But also, I've had other failures in my life which have like crushed me. So for example, I'm an amateur musician and I love music, but I've always really suffered from performance nerves. And I've got over it with singing. I'm quite happy sing in front of people,
right.
Although it did crush me for a while. But I am a pianist as well, and I kind of played as a child and then kind of stopped and took it back up again. And I remember when I took it back up again, I remember doing this really, really painful performance where, you know, the worst possible thing that can happen to you in the world. I got on stage to do my performance on this big grand piano in front of a group of people, nice friendly audience, but I just froze and I started to play and my mind just went blank, and I had to just say, I'm really sorry guys.
Yeah.
I'm gonna start again. And that's exactly what I did. But I remember driving home from that as an adult just in floods of tears, just thinking, what is wrong with me? Like, I am a grown adult, I can do this stuff. I took lots of exams as well as an adult, and you know, I play beautifully in the practice room, then I'd go in and fluff it up in the exam because I'm quite musical. I always seem to kind of get through it. But I used to be so frustrated with myself. And it was really interesting. It occurred to me that I was brilliant at taking rejection with my writing, because in a way, I don't know, I was so kind of confident with it. But there was something about music which felt so much kind of, it felt different in a way. I guess that's my very long-winded way, you know, because I think I'm quite a resilient person and I'm quite resilient to rejection. But is it possible that, you know, we can have sort of, we can be resilient and good at handling failure and rejection in some parts of our life, but terrible in others? Is that something that you've experienced?
Oh, totally. I mean, I think, but before I answer that, I just want to go back and say congratulations on on failing so beautifully. And you handled it so well. You know, performing live on a piano in front of people, is the stakes are so much higher than, you know, if you send an email and get an email rejection back. You still have that sort of anonymity. You can just go, all right, I'm going to just take a walk and have a cup of coffee or put some whiskey in it and I'll be fine in the morning, you know. But when you actually perform music in front of live people, you are in the arena, like physically in the arena. And I think you handled it so beautifully where you said, you know, sorry, guys, I just need to recalibrate and just get myself back. Because, you know, the biggest piece of advice that I got from when I used to be in the musical Mamma Mia and I used to be assistant associate choreographer. So that means the main choreographer would choreograph the show and then have his other assistants that would go around the world and set up the show or do auditions and find people to cast the show with. And the associate choreographer, his main assistant, Nicola Traherne, she said to me, you know, when she was training me, she said, you know, if you mess up anytime, stop, immediately say you're sorry, we're figuring it out, and then show them how you're figuring it out. Because what we all have in common is empathy. And the people that get all upset, like, oh, you don't know what you're doing, they're going to look like the idiots, right? So there's, especially in performance, when you mess something up or when you just draw a blank in the beginning of something, you just say, just like you did, sorry, guys, I just need to, okay, yep, get it back. Okay, thank you so much. And then you continue on. It's so vulnerable on the inside for us, but the people that are watching you, they go, wow, that's courageous. That's bravery. And you get so many more empathy points, you know? You get so much more like, oh, shucks, awesome. They did a great job, you know? Mm. So congratulations on that. So now I totally forgot
what your question was. Yeah, it still feels painful thinking about it, actually.
Yeah, of course.
And with singing, I think I've had, with singing, the reason I'm quite confident at getting up in front of singing is because I've had similar things happen to me with singing where I've just dried up. And I've had, like, you know, the worst possible performance ever. And I think it's just been so bad that I've thought that could never be that bad again. So everything's always, after that, like, everything's always been fine.
Exactly.
And I think it is important. But it's interesting how, you know, that's an area of my life where I feel so vulnerable. And I think it's also to do with insecure. Well, it's quite an interesting path maybe for us to explore. But I think I feel very insecure about my musical ability in the way that I don't about my writing. Because when I was a teenager, I talked about this. And just to fill listeners in, I heard Jonathan Tilley on Rob Lawrence. His Inspirational Creatives podcast and really wanted to have him on the show. And I was interviewed on Rob's podcast as well. And I'll link to both in the show notes because they're both really interesting interviews. But I had a crossroads as a child where I wanted to do music, but I was also good at writing. I wasn't sure which kind of path to take. And I had an incident where, you know, I performed in a big musical concert and then somebody came up to me afterwards and said, you know, I'm much better than you. And she probably was, to be honest. And I just had this kind of life-changing moment where I thought, you know what, I don't want to go to college and spend my day with people like that who are that arrogant. And because inside I was really insecure about my music ability. I came to it late. I hadn't had the same kind of instruction as other people. Whereas, you know, I was pretty confident with my writing. I thought I knew what I was doing. So I kind of took the easy route. So probably my own answer there is that, you know, music is an area where I feel more vulnerable. So, and I guess for my listeners, For many of them, I guess, approaching an editor for the first time, approaching their editor on the Huffington Post or approaching somebody on the New York Times or whatever it might be, they may well feel that same vulnerability that I feel when I get on a stage and open the piano lid. And I guess it's kind of, well, how do you move past that? Like you say, I mean, it's, you know, sitting behind your computer firing off an email doesn't feel on the surface of it as kind of vulnerable. But I guess we're all different. And for some of us, it is.
I think it's the thing of, like, how bad do you want? I don't want to go all tough on you on how bad do you want it, you know? But I think there's this thing that happens in us where we go, you know, it's the hero's journey, isn't it? You know, like the protagonist wants something and they try all these different ways of getting at it, but not doing the hard part of actually doing the work. Like, oh, let me just maybe post this on my blog and hope that somebody from the Huffington Post sees it and wants to take it on. It's like, probably not going to happen. So we try all these different approaches that don't seem to work, and we just feel more miserable and miserable and miserable about it. And then we finally get to the point where we go, you know what, I'm sick of feeling miserable and I'd rather just see what it feels like, even if it does hurt, to get marred with blood, sweat, and tears, to actually put myself in the arena and send out my stuff to the Huffington Post and just see how it goes, you know. And I think we're so scared of rejection because we think that the people at the Huffington Post or at Time Magazine or wherever, that they are royalty, that they eat golden nuggets for breakfast. Like,
yeah.
They're, like in Germany, they say, wir kochen auch mit Wasser. They also cook with water, you know, like we're all people and we're all human. And yes, it's their job to let in specific things into their magazine or not let things in, but that's their job. Just like it's our job to do whatever we do. And I think if we can just look at it on a human level and say, listen, this is where I'm at. This is where I want to go. And I'd love to share this with you and give from a place of abundance instead of scarcity. Like, I'm not enough. Never going to be good enough. We're all going to get rejection letters, you know. But we're never going to know until we actually do it. No's are free, right? So you can walk around your entire life thinking everybody's going to say no to me. Or you can walk around your entire, for the next 5 minutes and ask people, you know, on the street, do you like bananas? And they say no. Okay, at least you know. Go to the next person. Do you like bananas? They say no. Go to the next person. Do you like bananas? And they say yes. You go, wow, that took less than 3 minutes. I know two people that don't like bananas, but I do know one person that does like bananas. And you have the knowledge. And I think when you have the knowledge, then the fear subsides. Because then you know, instead of wondering, oh, nobody's going to like me. Two people don't like bananas, but one does. Great, let's move on. You know, it's more time saving. It feels extremely vulnerable and insecure. But if you want to get anywhere, you have to take action. And I think the way to get over that is just to have fun with it and laugh at it. And if you can actually say, you know, this feels strange for me, but I'm going for it anyway. That's so brave.
Yeah, I mean, there's two really interesting things that you said there, which I wanted to pick up on. The first one was about kind of not making editors into these kind of hero figures. Yeah. And I really like the work of Gabrielle Bernstein, and I'll probably get this wrong when I try and explain this, but she talks about kind of giving people false specialness. I think that's the phrase that she used. And I'd really love to write something about this, about how we meet people in life and we almost kind of put them up on a pedestal. And then when we try and interact with them, our ego kind of means that, you know, that's when we get all silly, when we try to talk to somebody and we suddenly find we can't string a sentence together. And, yeah. and we're just like sort of so in awe of them. We can't actually relate to them on a normal level.
Exactly.
And that's something I'm really kind of interested in exploring a little bit more. And I know, you know, I've been that editor sat, you know, picked up the phone to the quaking voice at the other end who's so nervous about talking to me, you know.
Yeah.
That they can barely get the words out. And I just kind of wanted to say to them, look, it's okay. Look, you know, I've picked up the phone. Just run your idea past me. It's fine. And you also said there something that I'm always saying to people when they're pitching is that if you go to somebody with the attitude of, look, I might be solving your problem here. You've got 20 pages to fill, and I think I might have something that might work for one of them. That's a really different energy to kind of going, oh my God, I've got this idea, and oh, are you interested in it? Oh, maybe you're not. And, you know, and some of the pitches that I get or have got from people will be that kind of, oh, you're probably not interested in this, but you know, and it's like, actually, you know, I might be. And if you have got something great for me, I really want to know, because that means I might be able to go home earlier, or I might have an easier day of it, or my editor might stop breathing down my neck asking me. And I think there is such a difference. And I'm always talking to people about how getting media coverage is really about being of service to journalists. And I don't mean that in a kind of sucky way, in this kind of like godlike way. I just mean like, look, you've got a job to do. You have to fill your pages, or you have to post up so many articles a day. I've got something that I think could fit with that. And just recognizing that that's a person just like you who's got a job to do, who wants to go home and maybe see their kids or go out for the evening, and you might be helping them. And I think it's just such an important thing to try and remember, I think, not to make, you know, not to give people this sort of false specialness or kind of elevate them so that you feel that you can't talk to them.
Exactly. I'm totally agree with you. And I want to say 2 points on that too. Number one, that, you know, I hate it when people write to me or for example, one of my courses, League of List Builders, where creative people we're putting together all of our creative materials and writing cover letters and stuff. And so one person asked the other day on the Facebook group, Jonathan, it just came from a place of scarcity and I'm not enough, right? It just blew my mind. He was like, yeah, Jonathan, I'm not sure. There's this really big international company that's home based in my town right down the street. Yeah, I don't know if I'm ready to get in touch with them or if they like, it was just laden with not enough scarcity, putting them on this holy throne that, you know. And I just go, number one, shut up. Like, you're bugging me. You're pissing me off. I'm sorry to get rude with you, but this is completely the opposite of what this course is about. Like, I refuse anyone that does my course on how to network and share your talent with the world from a place of abundance and that you're enough and worthy to do so, to write a question to me like that. So please reframe the question, because I have a killer strategy for you, but I'm not going to give it to you unless you reframe your question. Because if you don't reframe your question and write from and ask from a place of abundance and that you're enough and worthy to share your talent with the world, how in God's name are you going to get in touch with these people that have an international company? So he wrote back, he's like, oh, you're right, da 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 da. And then I gave him this kick-ass strategy. I'm like, you are the go-to guy that lives right down the street for this international company. Like, they need you more than ever. And it's like a gold mine in your backyard. I'm like, I don't even know how you could even overlook how talented you are and how close you are to your number one dream client and how they're going to be so happy when you reach out to them. So yeah, I totally agree with you on that.
And it sounds like you're saying, really, when it comes to kind of dealing with failure and getting turned down, that actually, basically, you've got to be in it to win it. And if you want to succeed, you've got to be willing to get out there and go for it. There's something actually I say to my daughter quite a lot, which I'm sure she'll remind me of when she's older, but she's 10. And she says to me, I'm not one for like, you know, I'm not like one of those mums who's kind of like running around the play park, jumping on things. You know, you get some people, enthusiastic people. But one thing I always take her on is the monkey bars. And I always kind of keep her there longer than she wants to be. And so she'll do one rung and then she'll fall off. And then I go, come on, get back on again. And then she'll do, and she'll, I can't. And I go, come on, do another one. Just get to the second one. And then she'll fall off. And then like, come on, let's do another one. And she's like, what's your obsession with the monkey bars? And I'm like, well, it's just that thing that like, you think you can't do it. And if you just kind of push yourself just to take that next step, just to hold that next rung, yeah, you might fall off, but the next time you get on, you'll probably do one and two. And then the next time you get on, you might even do one, two, and three.
Exactly.
And okay, you might have to come back next week for us to get to six. But, and she always teases me about it already. You know, she's only 10, but that's, and she says, that's your attitude to life, isn't it, Mum? And I'm like, totally. I am the person who's getting on the monkey bars, and
totally.
Falling off, getting back on. Because I know that falling off, just getting back on again, I'll probably going to get a tiny bit further the next time and the next time and the next time. And it feels like that's kind of what you're saying. It really is that monkey bar technique, is that you're going to fall off, but just get back on again. And
exactly.
You'll probably find you'll just get that little bit further.
Exactly. Exactly. And it's actually not that bad. Just keep on going. And that's where it's the law of the plus one theory. You know, like the more that you build on top of things, the bigger that you're going to get, the more growth you're going to have. You can stagnate and do zero action, take zero action, or you can take 100% action and fall down, adjust, pivot, you know, break a leg and get back up, but you're still going to have to keep going, because at the end of the day, this is the sharp turn that's coming out of nowhere. At the end of the day, you didn't die. Like, let's get really, really real for a second. In my book, Embrace the F-Word Failure, if you look at it from a place of giving from a place of abundance, where you have everything, food, shelter, and clothing, the three basic necessities that we all have and need for us to survive. If you have all those three things, then you're doing pretty well. But if you want to submit an article to the Huffington Post, awesome. But don't give it the weight of, I don't have food or water or shelter or clothing for the next week. I think we raise the stakes so high unnecessarily because we have forgotten how to fight for food, shelter, and clothing. I just saw the Leonardo DiCaprio movie last night. Oh, what's it called? The Revenant?
I don't know. I'll look it up and put it in the show notes.
It was so he got way back in the Wild Wild West, and he is literally like crawling out of his grave. It's a dark movie, but it's really, really good. And you just go, and afterwards I go, you know, we have roofs over our heads. We have life. We have running water. You know, we have heat. This guy like lived through the winter with just a fur jacket. You know, it was amazing. And I just go, how easily we forget that just a couple hundred years ago, we were fighting for survival. But because we have all these wonderful lifestyles that we have, you know, with food, shelter, and clothing, how easy we forget and how easily the stakes get raised unnecessarily for, you know, submitting your work, where it feels like life or death. But at the end of the day, nobody died. You know, the biggest failure of your entire life is going to be death. Like, let's just get really morbid for a second. So that time from this very moment up until the day that you die, you have all this time to play on the monkey bars.
Yeah.
You know, so why are we not playing on the monkey bars more? Falling down, getting back up and saying, whoops, I fell. Let me try it again. You know, we have all this time to play. So I want to play.
And I'm guessing that it's other people that other people play a big role in our failure. So, you know, I remember after my kind of infamous piano incident, I remember sort of going to my mom, you know, even as a 30-something, I was like, Mom, you know, what's wrong with me? Like, I'm good at music, but every time I get up in front of people, I just seem to stuff it up. And my mom said to me, she said, well, why do it then? Well, why do it? If you're going to do that, why bother doing it at all? And I was like, well, because I love music and I think I've got a talent and I want to share it with people and I love doing it. And she's like, but if it makes you feel this bad, and I remember thinking, well, it only makes me feel this bad today. In a couple of days, I'll feel okay again. It's a bit like, you know, on the way back, I did the London Marathon. I've done it the last 2 years. And on the way back, I thought, God, I never ever want to do that again. And my mum made me promise I wouldn't do it again. And then, you know, a couple of hours later, I decided I wanted to try and beat my time.
Of course.
But I suspect that it's other people that when we're kind of feeling really stung by failure and rejection, it's often about what other people think of us. It isn't really about us. And that's kind of, you know, that inner drive we've got. It's more about how other people see us.
Oh, totally. It's the, and not other people, but the core five, like the five people, maximum five people that if you lost everything, that they'd say, all right, come on over. You're staying at my house until you get everything fixed up, you know, and it has to be reciprocal. And they would do the same thing for you too. It's those four to five people that where their opinion matters most, and everybody else's opinion, it doesn't matter. Those five people, like your mom, your best friend from college, or, you know, we all know who those people are. That's our support network that we go to and we say, listen, I screwed up. I would love it if you could walk with me through this failure shame storm. Because I just need somebody to be next to me right now, not to listen and not to give me tips, just to listen, just to feel with me, and I'll be fine in a couple of days. Great. Awesome. Let's do it. You know, and those are the people that make all the difference in the world.
But sometimes I think those people can hold us back a little bit, can't they? I sometimes think
that's true.
As
you
much
gotta
as
be
I
careful
love
who you choose.
Yeah, as much as I love my parents, I think sometimes if I listened to some of the things that they said to me, I would still be teaching high school, basically, which is what
exactly
I used to do before I was a journalist, because they would say, you know, take the safe option.
Yeah,
so how do we kind of, I heard you talk about this on Rob Lawrence's Inspirational Creatives podcast, but you talked about, you know, when people, I mean, there might be people in your life that matter to you, but they are kind of getting in the way of your growth or they could do. How do you deal with that? So, you know, maybe you're okay with rejection, you're okay with failure, but actually other people around you are saying, look, you know, Jonathan, that's enough now. You know, you messed up on that podcast. Let's get sensible again. How do you kind of balance all of that with, does that kind of make sense?
I totally get what you mean. So with the core 1 to 5 people or the 4 to 5 people, these are little snippets from my course, The Sacred Space Session. So basically, and to answer your question, let me go a little bit deeper into that. So with the Sacred Space Sessions, basically you have it's an art journaling course, and the first week you build an island and you say all the things that you want to have on your island, and your island is you, right? A metaphysical version of yourself. My island has a rainbow that spits out M&Ms at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and we all go riding the M&M volcano lava. It's a joy. But of course, it's total fantasy and unrealistic, but it's still just fun and creative. So that creative part of yourself, that island, who are the 1 to 5 people that you would invite to stay on that island, right? And they can park their boats really, really close to your island. And that's your core 5 people that we were talking about, that when you fail, that, you know, they'll be there for you. But then there's maybe, I don't know, the next circle around your island, outside of the circle of your 1 to 5 friends, would be maybe your close friend circle, right? So maybe like your yoga instructor that you have coffee with sometimes, or your neighbor that also shares an interest in knitting or whatever, right? The close friends. And some of those close friends can park their boats a little bit closer to your island, and some of the close friends can park their boats a little bit further away from your island. Then you have, and the close friend circle is about 50 people. And then the last round of the big circumference around your island is 100 people of the acquaintances, like the mechanic, the postman, the school bus driver, the people that are sort of like extras in your life that just give you a bit of sense of placement, of who you are. You give them a sense of placement, who they are. You might not know their last name, but they do fulfill an important role in your life. I always say they're like the extras in your film of you. And that's the widest circle around your island. So if you build your island from inside out and you see where everybody is placed, and the wonderful thing is that you can place them wherever you want. And sometimes you can place people a little bit closer, and sometimes you can place people a little bit further away, depending upon how they're acting, how you're acting, how everybody's reacting to each other. But that said, there are some people that do not deserve to be in any of those zones or any of those circles. So there's I created an extra zone, which is far away, called the danger zone.
Right.
And the danger zone is a place where all those people, the naysayers, the negative people, the critics, that they can tie their boats up to that post in the water, wherever it is, but it's far away from your island. And they can stay there for as long as they want. There's a TV and speakers there that it just shows a continual live stream of your life. They can follow you on Facebook, or they can see what you're doing on Twitter, but you don't follow them. And they can stay there as long as they want. And the rule there is that you say to, there's a big post right above the above your TV and your speakers that says, I hear you, I see you. I'm still going to do it my way, and I'm not interested in your feedback. That's why you're so far out here. I'm done. Like, this is all you're getting, right? And when you, and they're free to leave, but they're not allowed to come any closer to your island. And when you start to put people in your danger zone, just in your mind, or even if you write it down, without even having to tell people, crazy stuff happens.
Right. Okay.
Like, they move away, or right. they just stop calling you, or they stop bugging you, or they, it's really strange. So if you just place the people and in relation to, if you were an island, how close would you let these people park their boats? And some people do deserve to be on the danger zone, that your life definitely shifts in a very positive way.
Right. Okay. And I guess sometimes that could be hard to do, because I guess it's human nature that even if people aren't good for us, we always want people to like us, don't we? So,
yeah, of course.
So even sometimes placing people away on an island, because that could be hard, I guess, because we, you know, we want people to like us. We don't want people to think we're kind of blanking them or whatever. But I can totally see how that would help. And I remember hearing you tell a story about how there was somebody in your life who was like that. Every time you talked about your plans and your dreams, they kind of be like,
oh, yeah,
that's not going to work.
Yeah,
cut you down, cut you back. And you just place them on this island. And then suddenly things kind of fell into place. That's brilliant. Well, I just could talk about this stuff for absolutely hours. It's so, so interesting. But I guess we're going to have to finish at some point. So where can we find you?
Yes, you can find me at jonathantilley.com. That is spelled JonathanTilley.com. Or you can learn more about my fun failing exercises at and get my book, Embrace the F Word Failure, at embracethefword.com.
Brilliant. Well, thank you so much. It's been absolutely fascinating. And can I just ask you one thing before we go? What would be your top tip? I'm totally putting you on the spot here, but what would be your top tip for dealing with failure?
Don't take it personal, but learn as much as you can from it.
Totally.
It's like Elizabeth Gilbert's book where she says, you know, bleed for your creativity, but don't take it seriously. Like,
it's
this, because we're all adults, we all kind of think in you know, in push-pull situations. Learn from it as much as you can, but don't take it personally. And the more that you just can just get back up and keep going, because the biggest gift in life is life, and that we have so much time to play on the monkey bars.
Yeah.
That to just don't take it personal, but just try and learn from it and keep going.
That's brilliant. Thank you so much for that. It's been been so fascinating. So thank you.
Thank you so much.
You've been listening to the Soulful PR Podcast with Janet Murray. If you enjoyed the show, do head over to the show notes at janetmurray.co.uk/episode27, where you can pick up the free download for this episode. And that's the first three chapters of Jonathan Tilley's book, the F word. So that's janetmurray.co.uk/episode27.
You've just been listening to the Soulful PR Podcast with Janet Murray. If you enjoyed the show, she'd really appreciate you leaving a review on iTunes. And don't forget to head over to www.janetmurray.co.uk for more free content that will help you get media coverage for your business.